Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
And we do need to talk about music. So we were talking about the fact that we hear in Israel, my son got married. He walked down the aisle, much to our surprise. I would say horror, but that would be a bit revealing, to simply the best. And it seemed to work because it really did make us smile and it did really put a smile on our faces. Karen M. is saying, what about dancing down the aisle to Jerusalem? I like that, Carol M. I think that could have worked as well. But what is it about music? Why does music have such an impact on our brain and on our emotion? Dr. Shana Safa, medical practitioner specializing as a psychiatrist at Netcare-Linksfield Hospital, joins us this morning. Good morning. How are you?
Hello again, Howard. Mazel tov.
Well, thank you very, very much. So it really is an amazing thing when we think about the emotional impact that music has on us. We play a song, it's one of Yaakov Shweki's song, Elokai Oz, sometimes on the morning show. It's a very emotive song. I have no idea what the words mean in Hebrew. And many of our listeners, in fact, around about half our listeners aren't Jewish. They don't know what it means either. But somehow it evokes something very emotional in us. And I deliberately haven't looked up the words and try to understand them because I just enjoy the fact that it talks to me without the words meaning anything. But what is it about that? What does music do to us and to our brains?
So it's a very, very interesting topic indeed, and it's actually quite multifaceted. Let's maybe go back to the understanding or the proof, in a sense, that music or sound actually has an effect directly on certain brain structures. So you're very it's a very good point you make. You don't want to know what the lyrics sound like. Have you heard of something called musicogenic epilepsy?
No. What is that?
Right. So many years ago when I was a student, a patient came in. It was a young lady who had a little boy. And the problem was that this woman kept having car accidents. And it became quite disturbing because she'd been to a number of doctors and they thought maybe she fell asleep at the wheel and, you know, nobody knew what was going on. But the bottom line is that she had a couple of car accidents because she lost consciousness in the car and nobody could find out what was going on. She had scans and EEGs, but eventually one day the little boy was with her in the doctor's room and he said to the doctor, why is it that mommy always goes to sleep when that one piece of music, that song's playing on the radio?
Mm-hmm.
To cut a long story short, they got hold of that particular piece of music or song, and they put an EEG, which measures brain waves and brain physiology, on the patient. And when they played the song, the woman started having an epileptic fit. Her eyes rolled back in her head. And she started fitting and lost consciousness. And this is called musicogenic epilepsy. It's when a particular sound or group of sounds somehow change the electrical activity in a part of the brain. And in her case, it was a part of the brain that was still so stimulated that it caused a seizure and unconsciousness. So that's quite a dramatic example of music being able to change brain physiology.
Right, but it does indicate that music, that might be dramatic and it might be more severe or extreme rather than severe, but it does indicate that music does impact on our brains.
Definitely. And then, you know, a couple of years back, I mean, exactly what you said, that there's certain pieces of music that people find particularly poignant. There's the guy I follow in this domain, his name is Professor Robert Zator. He's a Canadian neuroscientist, and he seems to have done the most research on how music affects the brain. He's even sort of taken cellists and put them in MRI scanners and looked at their brain function as they're playing. I mean, he's looked at all sorts of different effects. But one of the most interesting things that he points out, he looks at a thing called what he calls chills, C-H-I-L-L-S. What pieces of music or parts of a piece of music will sometimes consistently produce a chill in the listener. And he equates this chill to an outflowing of a hormone in the brain or a neurochemical called dopamine. And dopamine chemical, which I always call the cocaine chemical, as an explanation to my patients, but dopamine chemical is most intensely associated with pleasure and reward.
So it's so fascinating. What about, though, how much of an impact does cultural or family memory play on this? Because we learn, I would imagine, from a young age to associate certain types of music, especially in a religious setting, with an emotional experience. So if we're always seeing a bride walking down the aisle to a certain piece, that surely, well, is that piece emotional in of itself, or have we added a level of association to that emotionally?
Right, so let me make it quite simple, because at some level the brain can be simple. There's a part of the brain called the temporal lobe of the brain. It's actually, if you look at a picture of the brain, it's that part of the brain that kind of hangs down, you know, underneath the main brain. Now, this temporal lobe is very, very interesting, because this temporal lobe does mood and memory. It also does hearing and smell, but the big thing is mood and memory. And that's why what we find is that whether it's smell or whether it's hearing certain tunes or rhymes or whatever, it's extremely associated in the brain with our memory, and then it's tangled up with our mood, which is very, very interesting. That they're all in the same part of the brain, which we call the limbic system, which is also known as the emotional system. So it's quite a highly evolved system, and part of that system also involves a structure called the amygdala, which has got to do with our fear response. And this brings, you know, us to the manipulation of music, for example, in movies and in TV series. You know, there's certain music that definitely heightens our fear response. You know, in a scary scene, for example, in a movie. But back to what you were saying in terms of memory, the memory of the emotion will be re-triggered by that song being replayed even years and years later. Okay. In a similar way to the way smell. But,
and in fact, it was Hitchcock. It was Hitchcock. When you talk about movies, it actually was Hitchcock who was the first person to, as a director, to start using music in to build tension and stress for viewers. So it is interesting. Sorry, I didn't hear that.
No, there's a term called pathetic fallacy to actually.
The pathetic fallacy, absolutely, 100%.
So when you look at neurochemicals as well, there's two different neurochemicals. As I've mentioned, dopamine, which is the sort of chemical that is most associated with pleasure, and it heightens our enjoyment and interest and pleasure. It's also highly involved in addiction. But dopamine is the chemical that innervates the parts of the brain, which I like to call the executive office suite. So we're looking at sort of sharpness, clarity, energy, enthusiasm, drive, your get up and go, which is why there are certain pieces of music which stimulate dopamine chemical, which will actually give you a better workout when you're exercising. Or, for example, if I'm giving a lecture or a workshop and I want people to be particularly focused early in the morning, I'll often include a piece of music that stimulates the dopamine. So it's sort of akin to giving my audience a bit of Ritalin. There's certain pieces of music that will do the same thing for me.
And why then, is that why, for example, it's easier to exercise with headphones on and listening to music?
Well, I certainly think it is, and that is definitely cited as one of the reasons. Now, there's another chemical called serotonin. Now, people think that serotonin is our happy chemical because drugs and medications like Prozac and Zoloft stimulate that chemical, but it's not our happy chemical. This is the chemical of contentment. Serotonin is the chemical that allows us to take the edge off emotions, sit back, relax, not be so reactive, okay? And the idea there is that then it puts us into a mental or cognitive space where we are more able to make choices, to respond, let's say, rather than reacting. So serotonin is much more a de-stress type of chemical, okay? And there are certain pieces of music that stimulate serotonin more than adrenaline. And just to give your audience an idea, it's usually the kind of music that's in musicals, you know, the Sound of Music or in general, that kind of music is very serotonin producing, as are many of the classical music. So it's the genre of
that
music.
That is so interesting.
There are other things to look into, for example, like the tempo. So you'll find an average pop song has about 118 beats per minute. But what you'll find is if you push that up to something, you know, in the region of 150 beats per minute, that then will start to stimulate the dopamine. So the tempo can do it as well as the actual genre of the piece. And if you look into the literature, they've got sort of playlists that are serotonin playlists and playlists that are dopamine playlists.
Write that down. We want a serotonin. No, we don't want serotonin. We don't want them content. We want dopamine. That's what we're looking for in our listeners.
We definitely want dopamine. There you're looking.
Because we don't want them content. If they're content, then they just sit back and listen to me. They don't argue with me. And then I feel unloved.
Exactly.
So we can't have that. Shoshana Safa, thank you as always. What a fascinating conversation. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I could continue this for hours. It is a whole new world, which I think is absolutely astounding. Thank you for giving us the neurological basis for music.